You're listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and I'm really looking forward to today's show because, as listeners know, I love to talk politics, but I also am a policy wonk. And when interesting research and studies are done, especially on our region that impact our region, I love to have experts on to talk about it because our economic issues, our economic challenges, I think are directly related to politics. Without further ado, my guest today is from the Economic Innovation Group. You may not have heard of them, but I'll tell you, they're really good, and I would encourage you to check them out. I'll have more information on that later. But I have with me the director of research with the Economic Innovation Group. His name is Kenan Fikri, and he's joined me today to talk about a new report they've done that has a lot of relevance for our region. It's called The Economic Renaissance or Fleeting Discovery? Left behind counties see boom in jobs and business amid widening divides. There's good news and there's bad news. Kenan, thank you so much for taking the time to be my guest today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me.
First up, let's define what we're talking about here, left behind counties. Provide a definition for that, which really sets the stage for what the research really looked at here.
Sure. You know, we define left behind counties. Well, we started really thinking of the 2016 election period as kind of the arrival of left behind areas in the national political and economic consciousness. So we tried to create a definition that really captured the zeitgeist of that time as a juncture in both economic and political trends. So we looked at, we identified left behind counties as those that significantly lagged national population growth and national income growth from the year 2000, the turn of the century, up to the year 2016.
Okay. And if folks, if you get a chance, if you go look at this map of left behind counties, there's a cluster right in our area. On the Illinois side, on the Iowa side, and interestingly, those Mississippi River counties that are also Obama-Trump counties, but we'll get into the political stuff later. So what were the major findings here that I guess were encouraging for these left-behind counties?
Yeah, the good news is that left-behind parts of the United States have enjoyed their best 3 years of job and business growth in decades. Period. This is not quite the end of the story, but it's a big part of the story, and it's something that as we go deeper and talk about some of the bad news and all, we can't lose sight of that fact that it has been a very strong period of both job and business growth in counties that have not experienced anything like it, generally speaking, for quite some time. We think that this is meaningful. You know, the fact that again, job growth, it accelerated 4 or 5 times faster in the 3 years since the pandemic as it was in the 3 years before the pandemic. So this is a real meaningful acceleration in economic growth and change in economic trajectory for a number of places. And as we're thinking about them, you know, still as having been left behind in very recent memory, this to myself, an economic geographer, someone who researches this all the time, this is an important signal of reconnecting places into the fabric of the national economy. That these places, and you know, it's we care about places, but we more care about the people in those places and the people represented by them. It's more people actively participating in this wave of national economic growth, and it's not something that trends prior to the pandemic would have predicted at all. It seems to be a new break and a refreshing break as we're all looking for good news and reasons to be optimistic going forward.
Is there something that you could put your finger on that maybe caused this in these counties, or was it just kind of a natural evolution after? And we'll talk about the Great Recession and COVID. Was this just kind of a natural thing that you see, or was there specific causes?
I think there were many different causes, but what I would point to as some of the likely drivers and what really changed, well, is I'd say it's the muscular bipartisan response to the threat that the COVID-19 pandemic posed to Americans and American communities. And we marshaled really generationally significant resources and pushed it through the pipeline so that, you know, every household and every place was touched by it. And I think that, you know, those stimulus checks may have actually gone a long way in re-stimulating a number of local economies. And another thing kind of related to that is the fact that so many industries have been growing over the past few years. This recovery and the swing out of the COVID-19 pandemic has been led by transportation and logistics. It's been led by recreation. It's been led by mining and energy and manufacturing. That's very different from the recovery from the Great Recession, which was led by finance, even though they had just blown up the global financial system, and kind of the elite digital knowledge economy, white collar jobs that were so clustered in superstar cities. So we have a recovery that's firing on a lot more economic pistons today than we did a decade ago. And every place specializes in something else. So the more things you have growing and doing well, I think the more opportunities more places have to participate and contribute to that.
It sounds encouraging, but I worry, I guess, if it's partly due to the significant investment made after COVID, the stimulus checks and all that, could this be a sugar high that's going to wear off and then the trends are going to start decelerating, or am I being too negative?
You're not being too negative at all. I think where it goes from here is something that we all have to be asking ourselves about, asking our leaders about too, because the last thing we want to do is hang the mission accomplished banner. But we're encouraged by the fact that 2023 was a strong growth year. You know, we're out of the really elastic bounce back from the depths of the pandemic recession. So it's not just a almost statistical, like, yeah, we crashed and now we've rehired and that's what's driving this. No, it seems to be something more, something deeper, and it is continuing even as it's slowing. So job growth in 2023, of course, was slower than 2022. When we look to policy, there have also been a number of place-based investments that, you know, Congress has enacted and the Biden administration is in the process of implementing to boost left-behind regions, to broaden the geography of American innovation, and close even longstanding workforce gaps. I think those are still probably too early stage to be driving the numbers that we see today, but they may be very important in sustaining the momentum and making sure that these economic tailwinds that we finally put behind, left behind parts of the country, remain in place.
I live in one of these counties. Of course, our show originates in Rock Island County, which is one of these counties. I was particularly interested that the number of business establishments increased. That I know small business growth is so important in this country. And I was wondering about that after COVID, if we wouldn't get more small business growth, just making more things here. That's pretty encouraging. Do you have any other information on that trend to share with our listeners today?
Yes, a real silver lining from the pandemic and all the human suffering and economic uncertainty that came with it is that, you know, through it all, Americans chose entrepreneurship in unprecedented numbers. And I think that speaks to something deep in our culture, our society, and our economy, really, and how people view their role in it. That is quite heartening. So we saw a real surge in, you know, new business applications that has sustained all the way through 2023. Now, in the wake of the pandemic, we're seeing, I've spent most of my time looking at the data. So some data comes early, some data comes late. But as we get the lag data coming in, we see it showing up in more concrete measures of actual business establishments opening, really new firms started opening their doors in communities too. And it's real and for left behind communities too. It's the difference between seeing another shop get boarded up and seeing one open and hang a shingle and start to welcome customers in and kind of fill in main streets and streetscapes. And I think that it's a very important indicator of economic momentum and a vote of confidence in communities when you see a business opening instead of a business closing. So I'd say, I welcome all the job growth that we can manage, of course, but I think it's in a way a little even more heartening for a community to actually see that enterprise open up. And that's another thing that we hope sustains.
Job growth looks good. Business growth looks good. How are populations in these counties? I know a lot of them have long suffered population loss. Did that moderate some in your findings?
It did moderate. And I think that's part of the kind of shift from headwinds to tailwinds that have helped support the findings that we're talking about today. The gap in or now left behind counties as a whole across the country are almost breaking even in population. So neither population loss nor growth, but stability. And it's so important for a community because as soon as you're losing your workforce, your workforce is shrinking, you become just that much less attractive of a place for a new business to open or either to hire folks or to sell locally. And it can be very difficult to break that cycle of demographic decline that then takes an economic expression. But hopefully the shock of the pandemic also brought a technological shock in the form of remote work, ever increasing, internet access too, thanks to broadband rollouts and all as well. And that contributed, that had two important effects. One, it allowed people to move to new parts of the country that maybe they wouldn't have considered otherwise. So we saw really an explosion in destination counties to where Americans moved over 2022 and into 2023. But equally as important when you're looking at population numbers is that it can also stem the outflow of people from communities as well. So you're seeing, maybe you might not be seeing an influx of newcomers, but you're seeing far fewer young people leave or working age people leave to go find opportunities somewhere else. That again suggests that maybe there's a little more bulwark and stability that is going to be undergirding the formerly left behind counties now as we enter a new and different economic era. And that's something that was very much part of the break in trends and just dynamics pre-pandemic and post-pandemic.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. This is your host, Robin Johnson, and today we're talking about the economy here in the Midwest, really across the country, based on a brand new report that's come out by the Economic Innovation Group. Kenan Fikri is my guest. He's the director of research with the Economic Innovation Group. The report is called Economic Renaissance or Fleeting Recovery. Left behind counties see boom in jobs and businesses amid widening divides. Kenan, before we go on a little bit, just would you describe the Economic Innovation Group a little bit, when it started, what its mission is, and then also provide its web address so people could go look at this report and read it?
Yeah, absolutely. Please do. So the Economic Innovation Group, we're a research and advocacy organization based in Washington, D.C. We were formed in 2015. And our mission is to forge a more dynamic, entrepreneurial, and inclusive economy all across the country. And a lot of our work and focus on that word inclusion is geographic in nature and community by community, trying to broaden the geography of American investment, of American entrepreneurship, and really participation in the American economic experiment. And that's some of who we are. You can learn more at www.eig.org.
Okay, great. Thank you. We've talked a little bit about the good part about the report, the good news, income growth up in these left behind counties, of which most places in our listening area are left behind counties. Kenan provided a definition of that earlier. Good news on incomes, good news on business establishments created. kind of a mixed bag on population growth. Some places are growing again, some aren't. But there's also some, concerning news a little bit still. Can you share that a little bit as well?
Sure. The concerning news, a reason to curb the enthusiasm, if you will, is that, you know, on the one hand, we're seeing this renaissance in a number of left behind communities, but it's patchy. You see, you know, we're the top line trends we're talking about is almost 1,000 counties, how in aggregate they're performing. But underneath the surface, you know, we have really a diverse range of communities across the United States that can be considered left behind on any standard metric. You're talking about, you know, cities as large as Cleveland, Ohio, down to counties in rural Iowa, right? So each one is going to be having its own economic experience and undergoing its own economic story. So I would like to see less of a patchwork. I'd love to see more groundswell from every left behind county, you know, returning to growth than maybe what's present right now. I'd also say that underneath the headline of, you know, growth finally returning, you know, consistent, strong job and business establishment growth to left behind communities, despite that, the gap with the rest of the country is not closing. You know, we've seen, of course, very strong growth nationally and in non-left behind areas over the past 3 or 4 years since the COVID-19 pandemic as well. So we're left behind communities are experiencing, you know, the sort of economic progress that they haven't in a long time. Yet, you know, it's more, I guess, that maybe they're no longer being left out in that sense, but in a way they're still being left behind because a large swath of the country are still growing faster and more robustly. Looking forward, another reason for pause is to that the positive momentum is slowing. So we think that it's going to continue, but any recovery in these communities is going to be nascent. I think it's going to be fragile, and it's an asset that we have in the pocket now going forward for the next few years, but it's one that we need to not squander and figure out how we build on it more. And then last bit of context that's important to understand is that left behind communities have been characterized so for a reason. They had a very difficult two decades or say since the year 2000, since the turn of the century. As a whole, you know, even though these communities are pretty close to recovering all the jobs that they lost to the pandemic and then growing beyond those, they're still 1.8 million jobs short of the high point that they reached in the year 2000. So we're talking about green shoots at the end of, for many places, a long and difficult journey. But localizing it a little, you know, before this call, I was digging into Winnebago County, Illinois, which is of which Rockford is the seat. And, you know, that's a community where median household income fell by 20% from 2000 to 2016. That's a significant decline. And now you understand how and why that can feel like the bottom falling out of a community. And the fact that now, you know, since not just 2016, but since 2000, it's returned to really strong job growth numbers, income growth, even controlling for inflation has returned, and businesses are opening on net in the community again. That's a sea change, and I think it's very significant for a community to just be able to feel that it's turned the corner and changed trajectory.
To use a football analogy, it's the first quarter, left behind community's got a touchdown, but don't do the end zone dance yet.
That's right.
Okay. Sure. Good. We got that in. We're right here in the Quad Cities. We straddle both Illinois and Iowa. Anything in particular that you saw regarding Illinois or Iowa that is worth pointing out?
I'd say that the region is really a microcosm of the broader trends. I mean, we do see a patchwork where the larger cities in Iowa, so Davenport, Dubuque, or in your region, are doing better than some of the more outlying rural counties. I think, you know, locally, the population loss dynamics, which are still a real challenge, are more acute in more rural and outlying parts of the state. And that is, you know, that then on the other side of the Mississippi in Illinois, and you mentioned you were recording from Rock Island there. That's a, you know, Illinois is a state that's really has no peer in having almost every county losing population year in and year out right now. And that's a state level effect that is not that common across the map. Usually you have growing regions and declining regions, and a state can have more of a mixed bag. But there are probably real important conversations that should be had with relation to the national election, of course, but also locally. You know, how do communities change those dynamics and that trajectory? And you know, it's one thing to age through enter population loss through aging and kind of natural causes. It's another to have more active out migration and push factors out of a place. So I think the national economy can do a lot, but local leaders and state and local leaders have a lot of power in figuring out, you know, just how much they can support the national trends and boost boost the tailwinds that they may be enjoying.
That was going to be my final question, but I'm going to ask it now. It's a nice segue. Yeah. Is there anything gathered from this research or just in your experience that communities that are left behind have been doing that's maybe a pattern that you've noticed that others should take notice of?
Yeah, I think, you know, the pattern is that communities are now, communities are self-aware. They are committed to themselves. And I hope that doesn't sound redundant or circular or anything, but the fact that, you know, we've seen such a surge in the interest in place-based policy nationally, you know, that occupies some of my time as a think tank person based in DC, but it filters all the way down to the community level where you have seen a strengthening of ties and commitment to the economic well-being of places in a very local sense that I think is helpful here. And I hope it sustains and is something, again, that comes out of how the pandemic brought us together in unexpected ways and also has come out of the experience that some left behind communities have gone through. You know, it is not easy politically, economically, or socially to be left behind to the extent that many folks that have been categorized as such in our report have been. You know, we looked at other factors that maybe explain the group. You know, were they disproportionately dependent on manufacturing before or vulnerable to the China shock, stuff like that? And no single factor seems to fully explain what happened there, other than many of these counties, relatively rural, have older industrial bases. Maybe it's not manufacturing, maybe it's mining or something else too, or they were just settled a long time ago. And I'd say, yeah, since there's no one unifying factor that explains, you know, how they came to become left behind, there's not going to be a unifying solution that lifts them all up, but it's going to be locally grown, locally generated, and hopefully long lasting.
And that could be a really good next project for you to do. And I'll be watching for that, because it just seems like this was generated top down, and it's not going to continue unless a community gets some of the funding from the Inflation Reduction Act, Infrastructure Act, or the CHIPS bill. But a lot of this is going to be driven from the bottom up in the future, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think so. And I do hope that, you know, I've been working in economic development for a long time. We used to talk about, you know, the federal government being missing in action. Now they're here in a big way with a lot of money coming down the pipeline, not enough for everyone, of course. And a lot of it's been through competitive grant programs where everyone will rally together and submit a great application, but, you know, only a tenth of them can be funded, which I understand can be frustrating locally. But that's also, again, and it was an important occasion, you know, to bring people together and to, you know, get folks around the table and start envisioning a different future, and one in which, you know, the locality has more autonomy, right? And I think that even that process should be a useful legacy that people should, you know, proudly claim and run forward, even if they didn't get a federal award here, because that sort of energy and thinking and strategizing is new and welcome. And People from those conversations may then proceed to say, we don't need the feds, we can do it ourselves, or I'm going to go start my own business and help be part of this groundswell too.
You got about 2 minutes left. Your report did go into the politics. Of course, everything is political these days. And again, our region right here is heavily populated by Obama-Trump counties. And you looked at that a little bit, but what are the political ramifications of this in 2 minutes?
That's a great question. Yeah. We left behind counties in general as a class are characteristic of places that realigned strongly with the Republican Party around 2016. That's kind of a culmination of a couple election cycle trend, but we saw that in a big way, the shift really lock into place in that election, and then it remained there through the 2020 election. You know, I think voters are smart, and they know that any individual the individual occupant of the Oval Office can only take so much blame or credit for the economic condition in their own local community. But they also know what it's like to be ignored, or for there not to be a commitment to the well-being of their place. So I think it's going to be interesting to watch these results come in, because on the one hand, the trends that we talked about here today suggest that 2024 is not 2016. The economic backdrop across many of the communities that were starkly realigned, from leaning left to strongly right, are doing much better now economically. So the same playbook and messaging worked in 2016 may not work today because the background context is different. Finally, the federal government has started showing a much stronger commitment and recognition of how important it is, not just that the nation thrives, but that the nation's communities are thriving too. So I am eager to see how voters respond to this and what message that they send, as I'm sure you are too.
That's right. It used to be voters voted their pocketbook, and maybe not so much anymore. So yeah. We'll see. This election will be a good test of that. My guest today on Heartland Politics has been Kenan Fikri. He is the director of research for the Economic Innovation Group. That's EIG.org. Go look at this report. It's not lengthy. It's very readable. And I think you'll learn something. It's called Economic Renaissance or Fleeting History? Fleeting Recovery, I'm sorry. Economic Renaissance or Fleeting Recovery. Left behind counties see boom in jobs and businesses amid widening divides. There's a lot of other good research on there, and look forward to your work in the future. Kenan, thank you again.
Thanks for having me on.
Listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.